is Lyme Disease Awareness Month across the United States. And joining us is the president of Voices Against Lyme Disease in Connecticut, Bonnie Waterhouse. And Bonnie, welcome to Front and Center. Bonnie, are you there?
I am here. Thank you.
And welcome to Front and Center.
Thank you very much.
Bonnie, first of all, explain to our audience, what is Voices Against Lyme Disease CT?
Okay, Voices Against Lyme Disease CT is a nonprofit organization that actually is based out of Windsor, Connecticut. But we do do presentations and programs pretty much all along the I-91 corridor, and that goes all the way down to New Haven and then through Hamden and North Haven and Wallingford and then up through Windsor and Enfield. And it's a nonprofit that is all about telling the human side of this illness, what it does not only to the individual that has the illness, but what it's doing to the families and to the community and even to the workplace. It's very important that people need to understand how devastating this can be if people are not aware of what they should do if they get bit by a tick. Also need to understand ways of preventing it. We do not say, okay, you should not be going out in the parks and walking. That's certainly not the case. That's all great to be doing that. But we all need to know how to dress when we go out, how to prevent it, what to look for symptoms, and then what you need to do as far as getting medical help at the time.
Bonnie, do we know what the rate of the illness is here in Connecticut? In other words, is it a higher or a lower incidence compared to other areas of the country?
We are actually, across the United States, we're number five in Lyme disease, the first being Pennsylvania, and then Massachusetts, New York, New Jersey, and then Connecticut, and then a number of the other states. People used to think that it was only in New England, and that's not necessarily the case anymore. It is being found out in California, Michigan, Minnesota, so it is now everywhere in the United States. Actually, it's even in England and Asia at this point.
Why is Connecticut's rate among the top five in the nation?
That's a very good question. And part of the problem, I think, has to do with initially people used to think it was the deer tick, and it's still called the deer tick. So at one time we had so many deer here in Connecticut, which is really the reason why Pennsylvania is the highest right now, because they are being carried by deer. The situation now is, with all of us, a lot more development is going on here in Connecticut, so a lot of the woods are being, taken down and houses being built. The issue here is it is not just the deer any longer. What happens is the tick will become, the deer will be the host for the tick. It drops off the deer, and now the tick is looking for other hosts. And the different animals, in fact, the biggest animal at this point that carries the tick is the white-footed mouse. And most people realize that they are everywhere. You know, if you've got a crack in your foundation or in your porch, they're underneath your porch. Chipmunk, squirrels, rabbits, fox, even birds can become hosts. And they bring it to different areas. They'll drop it in the grass, and all you need to do is be sitting on your lawn in a lawn chair or maybe gardening, and they are now at your place and not just in the woods.
Can they also be brought in by a dog, let's say, and then transferred to a human?
Absolutely. It's very important if you're, even the cats that you might have that are outdoor cats, you really, number one, need to check your animals when they come in the house, but also they need to be vaccinating. The good thing is there are vaccinations for dogs for as far as Lyme disease. That doesn't mean just because they're vaccinated that they won't bring in the ticks. They could still be on the animal. Bring it in, they drop off, and you're going to find them. And one of the biggest issues or things that we talk about, a lot of families will allow their dog on the bed. or cuddle up with them. And it's wonderful. I have a dog myself, but I've never allowed her on the bed because what can happen is that tick can drop off of them, and now it's in the bed and it's looking for another host, and that host could be you.
What are some of the symptoms of Lyme disease?
The symptoms of Lyme disease are many, many different ones. I mean, you could start with migraine headaches. You could have a sore throat. Very much, I think the biggest symptom that people will talk about is flu-like symptoms. They may get chills. They may be extremely exhausted. You have sensitivity to light, sensitivity to sound. And again, you don't have to have all these, but you can have certain ones. And each person is a little bit different. You can have muscle pains. You can have neurological issues where your leg will start being jittery or twitching. You might have those kinds of movements. Again, so many different people have so many different symptoms that this is why this illness is called the great imitator, because there are some doctors that will diagnose it as MS, Lou Gehrig's disease, Alzheimer's, chronic fatigue syndrome. It could be, somebody will say, if you're a teen, it's mononucleosis. There are so many different things that it looks like and it mimics, so it's very hard sometimes to be able to say that this is really Lyme disease.
So what should somebody do to make sure they get a correct diagnosis?
Well, first of all, the biggest thing we tell everyone is you need to be your own advocate. We have a term that's called Lyme literate doctors, and that means doctors that are very knowledgeable in Lyme disease. And what they need to do, the doctor not only, doctors will test you. Not everyone gets the rash. Everybody seemed to think that, oh, if I get this bullseye rash, that means it was a tick that was on me and I may be infected. Only 55% of the people actually get the rash. The other 45% do not, and they may have all those other symptoms but no rash. So when you go to the doctor really needs to look at you holistically in the respect that, okay, what are the symptoms that I'm hearing about? All right, we're going to test you. We're going to test you. There's two different tests, current tests that they're using frequently. One of them is called the ELISA test, which is E-L-I-S-A, and the other one is the Western blot test. They can come back negative, and you can still have Lyme disease. And this is a good point for me to say, I am not a doctor, I'm not a nurse, but we do have medical advisors on our board as part of Voices Against Lyme Disease. And certainly I have firsthand knowledge with a son that's had Lyme disease for 25 years. That's another whole story. But in any event, the doctor needs to be able to take those blood tests. And one test may come back positive, the one may come back negative. But overall, they need to look at all of your symptoms to see, is it possible? Maybe we should be giving you the antibiotics. And I know there's controversy about giving on antibiotics when you don't need them. But this is such a devastating illness. If it is not caught, you can be suffering for the rest of your life. Doesn't happen to everyone. Certainly you want it caught early, which is why we say you have to be your own advocate. In talking even with one of our advisors, if you are hurting and you're still aching and you still don't feel good after a month and your doctor is saying he can't find anything wrong, be your own advocate, find another doctor, and let someone else examine you as well.
That's the biggest thing, sure. Talking with Bonnie Waterhouse, she is president of Voices Against Lyme Disease CT. I'm Dan Lovallo. Bonnie is our guest on Front and Center. So, Bonnie, essentially, one of the things you said before was that even if you don't have the rash, doesn't mean you don't have Lyme disease. Is that right?
That's correct. Only 55% of the people actually get the rash. And some of the people may get a rash, but it isn't going to look like a bullseye. So there are certainly, you know, if you start to get blotches of rashes all over your body, it's still possible. It could be an allergic reaction to something, but it also could still be bitten by a tick and you're just not getting that bullseye.
What about the younger children? Do we have a percentage of how many of them are afflicted with Lyme disease?
Yes, we do. And a lot of our numbers are based on 2014, because the rest of the numbers are still coming in, and that's certainly, you know, another discussion. But currently, we are at epidemic proportions as far as across the country, as far as Lyme disease. 340,000 to 400,000 people a year get diagnosed with Lyme disease. Of that, 25% of them are children ages 5 to 14 years of age. So we're saying almost as much as 100,000 children are diagnosed with Lyme disease. And again, if it's caught early, great. You know, they're going to get well and they're going to be fine. If it's not caught early, then they could have a long period of time of beginning to feel better.
Wow, that's an incredible amount when you think about it, though.
It is, and it's scary, which is why we do all of these awareness programs. You know, we not only do them for adults, but we've also started now, and we're really focusing on the children. We've done a couple of scout groups. We're trying to get into some of the school systems and do some programs. We don't want to scare the children, but we want them to be aware of what they need to do. You know, if they're walking in the woods with their parents or whatever, they need to walk on the path. They don't want to go into the bushes and looking around. Because the paths are pretty much trampled down, so less chance, and they need to wear specific clothing or wear their clothing a specific way, less chance of having the ticks.
Which, of course, is really difficult when you're talking about kids, right?
Absolutely, especially in the summertime. I mean, we all want to wear sandals. You know, we all want to wear shorts or cutoffs or whatever. But when you walk in the woods, you need to realize that, okay, maybe I need to put something on to help prevent getting those ticks, whether on me at all or at least having them drop off.
Do we know how insurance covers this, where that all stands?
Well, and insurance is very difficult. Certainly, I know firsthand that insurance companies will not always cover it. And the way that works is, again, there is controversy within the physician world as well as overall medically. Is there such a thing as chronic Lyme? A lot of people do not believe. CDC is really saying there's no such thing as chronic Lyme. My belief is it doesn't matter what you call it. You can call it chronic Lyme. You can call it late stage Lyme disease, which CDC will use that term. Others will use the term syndrome, you know, Lyme disease syndrome. All that means is whatever has happened to your body, and it can affect all parts of your body. It can literally affect every organ in your body and also affect your brain if it's not taken care of immediately. So what happens is the health insurance will cover it to a certain point, but if you find a Lyme literate doctor or you all of a sudden start needing IV antibiotics and no longer orally, there are certain things that will not be covered by the health insurance companies. And I know that for a fact because we've lived it. And again, we're not the norm, but certainly with the people that we talk to when we do events and they come up and they talk to us, you know, my insurance isn't covering this, or certain lab work they're not covering at specific labs that are specialty labs that can also look into the other tick-borne illnesses that you might have. That's when it's very difficult, and that's one of the things we would like even our state to begin looking at and talking to the health insurance companies as to how we can help those people, because so many of those people can't work because they're that bad in the way they feel, as far as not the fatigue and not being able to go in and memory loss and cognitive issues, that the money isn't coming in, and now all of a sudden to go see a doctor, it's going to cost them $700 and the insurance isn't going to cover it. So that's part of our discussion with legislators, that we really need to get help to these people.
Now, as you have alluded, you have personal experience with Lyme disease. Would you like to talk about that?
Yes. I have a son that's had Lyme disease for just about 25 years now. He got his first tick bite when he was a teenager. He was working as a reservoir as a ranger, renting boats. 25 years ago, they really didn't know that much about Lyme disease. I mean, there was, because in the 70s, of course, there was the whole discussion about the rheumatoid arthritis, the children in old Lyme. But in any event, he was a teenager, and because of that, they diagnosed him with mononucleosis, strep throat, you name it, and he was diagnosed with MS and all these other illnesses. And it took almost a year and a half before, and going to a number of different doctors, that finally he ended up with Bell's palsy, and the doctor that he was currently going to at that point in time said, I think you may have Lyme disease. By that time, it was very late for him to start antibiotics, but he did start them. And the good thing is, for him and for people that do end up with chronic Lyme, we'll often go into what we call a remission period, where they're feeling much, much better. They're out, they're doing things, they're really enjoying life, and there might be a huge stress that happens in their life, or a transition, a major transition. And all of a sudden, that illness is still in the cells of their body, and it comes out, literally comes out again, and it can come out in full force. And at this point in time, and that can happen a couple of times throughout their lifetime. It could happen, it could never happen again. It depends upon the individual. And there's terms that they use about persisters and so forth. But in my case, my son still has it. Right now, he's in a very bad place with it for about 5 years. And he's on an IV, daily IV that he has to take. And we've been through different doctors, Lyme-literate doctors. We've been to New York doctors who have helped him. We've been down to Stony Brook, everywhere. And now we're currently at a doctor in Connecticut. And there are a number of good Lyme-literate doctors in Connecticut. But when it took so long for them to find out what was wrong with him, that was part of the issue for us. So we've been there with cost, what it's cost him, what it's cost us as a family. He is married, has a wife and two children. And what happens is there are days when you can't do anything, or days when you think you're going to be able to go to a soccer game for your child, and all of a sudden you can't go because you're that bad. And then your spouse has to take on a lot of those responsibilities besides the working, and you have to stop working for a while until you're feeling better again. Those are all the things that as a family we have seen, and certainly as a community, people should be aware of it. We talk about that on our Facebook page. You know, people say, what can I do to help them? It's understanding the illness and what it's doing to the individual, where sometimes they can't even remember certain words in a sentence. How you can come over and give them a hand and you know, just bring dinner for them to help them, or just to listen to them. That's what the people just want, others to understand what it does to them. You could look well, but inside you feel awful. And it certainly causes issues, again, as a family, as part of the community, and productivity and work.
Talking with Bonnie Waterhouse. She is president of Voices Against Lyme Disease, CT. Bonnie, do we know what the status is as far as research into treating Lyme disease is concerned?
Well, the thing that we're hearing more and more is they're looking for a more reliable test for Lyme disease. As I said, those two tests that are currently taken, they will often come back as negative, and the person really does have Lyme disease. And there are issues around that, such as the antibodies in your body, that it's not picking it up or whatever. They are looking at DNA, different ways of testing for reliability. There's a number of researchers working on that. I think they're focusing on that, and I certainly have no issues with that. I think that's wonderful, because if we can catch it earlier, the better. You know, there, people won't have what we call the chronic Lyme or the late stage Lyme if it can be caught early enough. The Defense Department, which interesting, we were very happy to hear this past year, actually set aside $2.5 million. It's not a lot. I'm sorry, $3.5 million. It's not a lot, but they're looking into it because so many of our service folks are coming back from camp or coming back from somewhere, and they've got Lyme disease. And now they're saying, okay, you know, it sounds like we need to get involved in this too. So those are the good things that we're hearing about it. We are also understanding now a little bit more about how the tick, or the illness from the tick, I should say, lives inside the cell, because it actually puts aside a biofilm around the cell. So it's hiding. The illness is hiding, and when you hit it with antibiotics, some doctors are believing that if you do it in a pulsating way, like for a week or two, and then stop, and the biofilm is dissipated, and then they can shoot it again and start hitting the illness again. So there's a lot of that going on. The other thing that I was very happy to hear, Red Cross is now also asking you if you have, they talk more about the babesiosis, which is another coexisting illness for Lyme disease, that they will ask you when you go to give blood, because part of what they were finding is people didn't realize that, and they were giving blood to others, and then in turn they were giving the illness to others where they really thought they were helping them. So it's good to hear that there's more of an awareness out there. I think what I would like to hear, and I guess I'm being selfish, I want cures. I want right. somebody to come up with a cure for this. Not only for my son, but from all these people that we talk to, one family in general, the whole family has Lyme disease.
Wow.
The mother, the father, the two children, and the dog.
Oh, my goodness.
And how do you deal with that? You know, who can help them when they're not feeling well?
Bonnie,
who can help them with their insurance?
Bonnie, we're running out of time. Do you have a few minutes after the news to stay with us?
Absolutely.
Okay, good. We'll be back with Bonnie Waterhouse. We're going to take a break. We have Fox News coming up here on Front and Center, and then we're going to continue this conversation. You know, Bonnie was talking before about the productivity and all, and think of how all of this affects us from that perspective. Fox News is coming up. We'll be back. We'll talk a bit more about Lyme disease. And welcome back to Front and Center, brought to you by Frontier Communications. I'm Dan Lovallo. And we have been talking with Bonnie Waterhouse. She is president of Voices Against Lyme Disease, CT. And Bonnie, before the news, you were talking about one family, the entire family that's affected with Lyme disease, and even the dog has Lyme disease. How about expanding upon that?
Well, you know, here again, it's very strange. And I know we initially spoke about Connecticut and why there are so many ticks and so forth. What I didn't touch upon, which I probably should have, is we've had a couple of very strange winters. The issue is not just the adult ticks, the adult female ticks that could carry Lyme disease, but the nymph ticks also carry, if they have Lyme disease, you can get bitten by them and you could acquire Lyme disease. What happened, not this past winter, but the winter before, it was so cold with so much snow. The nymph ticks are actually sitting underneath the leaves, and they're living underneath the leaves. And we got piled with all that snow that year, one on top of the other. It was almost like an igloo effect for them. It kept them alive. Not many of them died off, which is why we ended up with so many that year. This year, it was the exact opposite. This year, it never froze long enough, the ground, for them to, you know, for any of them to die. They just kind of lived under those leaves, and it got warm again. And then I have been talking with people that they were seeing ticks in February, which is not unusual. They can be 10, 11 months, because it's the nymph tick and the adult female tick that can carry this illness. So there's more and more of that happening, and probably The folks that I'm specifically talking about are in the area where there are a lot of open space. And again, the dog could be bringing it in. They could have been walking, maybe off paths. Interesting enough, we're beginning to hear more and more about certain invasive plants that attract the ticks. So that may be something that is on the edge of somebody's yard that they need to start looking at as well. But when we hear these things, I mean, this particular family has been so affected by this, even to the point where the young man offered to start, and I'm talking about one of the young children, wanted to be part of a support group and help other children understand Lyme disease and maybe work through it with other groups. And actually, I've spoken with, we often go to other conferences, and we were in Maine just a couple of weeks ago, and actually became friendly with another organization where this woman is, she had two little children, couldn't work anymore, started talking with another woman that had Lyme disease, the two of them, and every day when there were issues, when they couldn't get up, they were just hurting so much, they would call each other. This woman is in remission now, and she has been running marathons, which is what we hope everyone will get to that point again. So we hear so many of these stories, and the good thing is when we hear them getting better, we're ecstatic. We love that. But to hear a whole family be affected by that, that is not unusual. And again, it's a matter of you've got to make sure that you dress properly when you're outside. You've got to check your children when they come in. That is key. All they have to do is be sitting on the grass, and they come in, make sure when they take a shower that you check them, or if they're old enough, they can check themselves. The ticks are looking for warm places on your body. They are going to crawl up, and you can't find them until after they've engorged, because they actually are carrying an anesthetic that they poke you with, so you don't feel them when they start engorging. So it's extremely important to dress properly and to check each other and check your children. Those are the key things. We want people to be outside. They need the fresh air. They need the sun. But we need to be safe.
How should a tick be properly removed?
It should be removed the best way. There's a lot of other little tools out there. But to be perfectly honest with you, a tweezer is the best thing. We hear people, oh, well, I burned it off, or I put this Vaseline on it. We suggest that you do not do that. What happens is if you take the tweezer, you want to take it very slowly and lift the tick up by its head. So you want to get underneath the head and pull it up. You've got to get the head out of your skin. The reason for that is the bacteria that it's carrying comes from the gut, goes into the saliva glands, and actually that's what they shoot into you to give you the illness. You need to get the head out, because if you take part of the body out, the head is still there and the saliva gland is still attached to you, or the mouth is still attached to you. So pull it straight up, pull it slowly, because you might miss it. You might only pull out half the body. But that's the key, is to get it, and then put antiseptic on where the tick bite had been. And again, if you can keep the tick, a lot of the health departments, you can bring it in a jar. They will send it to the agriculture experiment station, have it tested to see if it has Lyme. I can't say that all health departments will do that, but I know the Windsor Health Department does do that. So it can be tested, and they will let you know. If it's at a point where you do have the rash, make sure you get to the doctor. Some of the doctors will accept the tick and send it in to be tested. Others won't. But the key is to do what you need to do immediately and get to the doctor.
Well, this has been very, very educational. And I know that your group will actually go out and speak to groups. How about talking about that?
Sure, we do go out. Last year we became a nonprofit in March, and just in 2015 we did over 30 locations, from NBC Wellness Fair to senior centers, to libraries, to civic organizations. We will continue to do that. We did, I think I mentioned a couple of scout places. We even went to one of the high schools where there was an honor group working that would be working in the medical field. They asked us to come out. We are more than willing to come out to any organization, to businesses such as landscaping businesses or utility companies where their people are outside. And also, again, the children. We really would like to get into the schools or into some of the family resource centers and talk with the parents and the children, make it fun for the children to have actually leaves. And what we use for them is we actually put poppy seeds underneath it so they think, you know, they need to find the tick kind of thing. So it's more fun for them. We do this free of charge. We are all volunteers, and we will come out, and we live on donations that sometimes come from civic organizations, some from other folks, just individual donations, and we certainly appreciate that. But again, we do not charge, and we can do it for 5 people, we can do it for 50 people, and all we need is a phone call, and we'd be more than happy to go out and talk to folks.
And you have an event tonight, don't you?
We do. We have an event here at the Windsor Public Library in the center of town. I believe that's 320 Broad Street. We will be there from 7 to 8 tonight doing a presentation.
Bonnie, anything else you'd like to add?
I think that's it. I guess the thing that I want to again mention is you need to be your own advocate. You also need to enjoy being outside. This is not about scaring you. It's keeping you aware of what you need to do and how to dress, and that's very important. We want everyone to have a wonderful summer, but again, be safe. And thank you very, very much for having me on.
Bonnie, thank you. You have been very informative, and thanks for spending some time with us today.
Okay. Thank you, Dan. Have a good day.
You too. Bonnie Waterhouse, and she is president of Voices Against Lyme Disease CT.